Fay Wray was one of the hardest working actresses in Hollywood in the 1930s, and the screenwriter Robert Riskin wrote some of the best films of the cinema's golden age. The two met at the peak of their careers, married and started a family, and a new book reconstructs the details of their fascinating lives and the world around them. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. My guest today is author Victoria Riskin. Her recently published book titled Fay Wray and Robert Riskin, A Hollywood Memoir, is an engaging history of two very talented and hardworking artists and their contributions to Hollywood, both the industry and the community. Victoria Riskin is the daughter of Fay Wray and Robert Riskin, and I'm delighted to have her on the program this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. It's nice to be with you.
It's very nice to talk to you. It's a wonderful book. I should note that you will be in El Paso next week to introduce several of your mother and father's films and for a book signing of this wonderful biography of both of them. I have to say, it's one of the most engaging biographies I've read in some time, and I read a lot of biographies of people this time. And not to disparage other biographies by family members, but I found your writing was so well-researched and so contextualized their lives that it really went beyond many of the family biographies I've read. You must have spent an enormous amount of time researching something very intimate to you, your own parents.
Well, first of all, I'm honored that you would say that because I know you are a scholar and a lover of the golden age of Hollywood. I spent a lot of time researching both their lives. I went back and read newspaper articles. I dug out old memos. I read their love letters to one another because I was trying to walk in their footsteps as intimately and as closely as possible as I could. And that was part of the joy of it, but I also, there were days when I felt like I went down a rabbit hole and I wasn't sure I'd ever return, but the result was worth it. And I went down some funny detours, but I felt it was such an interesting time, and they were remarkable people. They were both extremely bright and had a kind of sparkle and energy and optimism. They were very talented, each separately. I mean, I think their coming together finally was this great kismet.
Mm-hmm.
But they came from very poor backgrounds and had that kind of scrappiness and self-confidence and optimism that led them to Hollywood and to significant success, and then were sort of in the center of a lot of the things going on in Hollywood, the Hollywood labor wars, their coping with the Depression, the lead-up to World War II, the big events of that era. And so I wanted to give the context for their lives as well as the stories of who they were as people.
You do that very well. And just to set up listeners who may not be completely familiar with these two names, they are familiar to me, but this was 70, 80, 90 years ago, the history you're talking about. Your mother, Fay Wray, was a very prolific actress, began in the silent period. And I guess King Kong is the one that everyone knows, but she made, over 120 appearances in films and television?
Right, mostly in starring roles, sometimes supporting roles, but mostly starring roles.
And your father, Robert Riskin, a lot of people don't know the names of screenwriters, but a significant screenwriter in the 1930s and 40s.
Yeah, I think he set the template, in a way, for the romantic comedy, the screwball comedy, whatever you want to call it. But beginning early in his career in Hollywood, he featured women, and they were independent and spirited and funny and charming. And so he just had a romantic knack and a sense of humor and wit that was wry and off-center. And that just led to a certain style that then sort of became a fashionable style of storytelling.
You mentioned those romantic comedies and the screwball comedies. He was there at Columbia for the advent of the screwball comedy, and he and his association with Frank Capra, the great director there, and their film It Happened One Night, which swept the Oscars that year, 1934, really established the formula for those great romantic comedies of the 1930s. And the two of them were collaborators on some of Capra's greatest films throughout the 30s.
They worked extremely well together. My father was a wonderful writer, and a great ear for dialogue and pacing and timing. But I think his partnership with Capra brought out the best of his storytelling, mm-hmm. because Capra had a sense of a visual timing and fluidity and richness. If you see his movies, there are very few static scenes. They have a kind of movement and energy, and I think he worked extremely well with actors and was good at casting. So between the two of them, it was a rather special partnership.
I was taken with the early history of both your mother and father, particularly the notion that your mother was sent off with a man to Hollywood when she was 14, and this man promised to get her into movies, sent alone. And your father, sounds like when he was a teenager, was sent down to Florida to oversee and produce some short comedies in the teens. It's really an extraordinary picture of literal wild, wild west in some case, of what L.A. and Hollywood was like in the formative years of the studio system.
Well, indeed. And I think my mother first saw silent movies when she was living in a little mining town in Utah, and a kind of, you know, where they put up a bed sheet and had a
right
kind of flickery image on a screen, and there was little Mary Pickford, and some guy played a piano that probably was missing a few keys, that kind of thing. But it gave her a sense of another world and a magical world that she wanted in her heart to be part of. They were very, very poor. They moved to Salt Lake City, and there was hardly enough food to go around. So when this young man who was a photographer befriended the family, he said at some point, I think I can take Faye to Hollywood and get her in the movies, maybe. And everybody got excited about that. And it seems like, getting alone on a train with no telephone, no way of reaching the family, and going by herself with this young man, who was 21 at the time, I think, to Los Angeles, the only thing that was a little disquieting for her is when they got on the train, he told her he was in love with her. And she hardly knew what to think of that, you know.
At 14.
Because she was in many ways, a very protected child. But she had this sense of destiny, that this is where she belonged, and it worked out all right. And she came and stayed with a family that he placed her in a family and took her after school and on weekends to meet people in the movie business. Meanwhile, back in New York, my father left school when he was 12, and that's what kids did then. You know, they got through to sixth grade if they could, and then they went off to work. And he was working in the garment business, and he was a kind of an office boy to these two guys who had invested in something called the new, you know, movies, these two real comedies. And when they showed them to my father and asked his opinion, I'm not even sure they asked his opinion. I showed him the movies, and he said, they stink. They're terrible. I could do better than that. And when they couldn't sell them, they sent him. Now, I don't know, he was probably 14, 15, 16. I don't know how old he was. It was
remarkable.
Now a little bit older. They sent him down to Florida to be the writer, producer, the director, the everything for these little movies. And he made 100 of them, of these little two real movies, and he figured out how to sell them into distribution, and he even said he grew a mustache to look older, but there wasn't enough hair that came in, so he had to put mascara on his, I don't know, it sounds like he was, it was really, he was a clown, he was a wonderful, impish character. So he spent 2 years making these movies, I guess one a week.
Zooming forward, though, into the 30s, it's amazing all of that hard work, that work ethic that they both brought to their jobs in Hollywood. Your mother made some 21 pictures just over 2 years in 1933 and 34. It's incredible output. But I was also zooming out from that image of 33, 34, 35, that we often think of the work of that period from an artistic standpoint, but economically, it really came across to me reading the book, how central your two parents were and very important to the survival and success of two studios. RKO, when your mother made King Kong, it was such a success. This was the Depression. The studios were, many of them were on very rocky ground financially, and that was such a success that it carried RKO for another year or two. And Columbia, those films that Frank Capra made with your father, Robert Riskin, were so successful, it really elevated Columbia into almost the category of a major studio at that point.
Well, I think you pick up a very important point that I tried to illustrate in the book, because by 1933, it's the heart of the Depression. People stop going to movies. The big studios are losing money hand over fist. They're saddled. The big companies are saddled with chains of theaters around the country, and they couldn't fill them up and sell enough tickets. And they were facing significant financial disaster. RKO is already, I think, in bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And when Marion C. Cooper teamed with Ernest B. Schoedsack and hired my mother to do King Kong, and the first week that showed in New York at the Radio City Music Hall and the theater across the street, 9,000 people in one first night came to see the film. So it was overnight rescued RKO. And the same was true for Columbia Pictures. They were struggling, although they did not own theater chains, and they didn't have heavy contracts with stars. Harry Cohn was just too cheap. But he also felt that it was the writers who were the stars. If he had good stories and then he could hire away from other studios the stars he wanted, he didn't want to be saddled. And so it happened one night, and First Lady for a day, and then it happened one night. Catapulted Columbia Studios into a top-tier studio rather than what they called it at the time, the Poverty Row studio.
Right.
So they played my parents, each of them in their own way, you're absolutely right, played a very key role in the survival of the motion picture industry. And they felt that way about it. They loved the movie business. And they felt a sense of affection and caring and dedication. And I think other people felt that way, too. I don't think they were unique. But in the middle of all this, Charles, was the labor wars. They were also having labor battles.
Yes.
In the trying to form unions to protect writers and actors and from the abusive sometimes behavior of the studios.
Right. You cover the Depression, the formation of many of the guilds, like the Screenwriters Guild and Directors Guild, and World War II comes along. You know, you really get a sense of how they as individuals faced some micro as well as macro challenges in their life that everyone was facing. You're going to add a lot, I know, to some screenings coming up next week. You'll be in El Paso on Tuesday and Wednesday for a book signing, and you'll be introducing, looks like King Kong, The Wedding March, two films by your mother, and then a film that your father wrote, You Can't Take It With You, Frank Capra film from 1938. When you see these films again on the big screen, like you will this coming week at the Plaza Classic Film Festival, do you get the sense that their work is ageless, or that you're looking at a time capsule, just has frozen a moment?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't thought about it that way. I think it's somewhere in between. I mean, these certainly, if you look at King Kong, it has one of the early films to use technology, stop motion mm-hmm. photography, and green screen techniques, and so on. And in one way, it looks like a film from another time. And in another way, it has this enduring quality. You fall in love with the characters. I think my mother's particularly good in the film. And when I first saw it, you know, which was in the 1950s, my sympathy was for King Kong. And I think that's still true. And I think the remakes are good, but they don't rise to the level of the original. So that's an interesting thing about whether or not these survive. If you watch today, It Happened One Night, or You Can't Take It With You, they're just as thoroughly enjoyable today as they were back then. What's different for me, seeing them at these, and I can't wait to come to El Paso, I know it'll be a great experience, and I love seeing them on the big screen, these films, because they've been restored, and the richness of the black and white photography and the subtlety of the performances when you see it on a cleaned up print is just so lovely. It's a great experience. So, and I'm also seeing, even with You Can't Take It With You, which was written originally for the stage by Moss Hart, but my father did a wonderful adaptation. And I see him in the film. I see his personality.
I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, you're in a very unique position. You have intimate knowledge of both them, though your father did die when you were a girl. So, but your mother lived a very long life. And obviously, when we as lay people watch films, we know that actors and artists making the films are portraying some other life. But I'm wondering, when you watch their films, if there are times when a gesture or a look or a line of dialogue resonates and you think, you know, that's a little bit of my father, or that's who my mother was right there. There was a moment that came through.
Well, with my mother, she sometimes would have a look, a glance that was beguiling or in, is kind of sparkly, a little. She had a wonderful sense of humor, and if you were talking with her today, she would not only make you laugh, but she had this great sort of uninhibited way of laughing herself. And so sometimes I see that come through. Hmm. And she had a kind of elegance, and she had a way of lighting up a room. And so in these various films that I see so much of what I loved about her, my father's wit comes through in just about every film. Is so much his personality. And if you see a film like Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, you know, kind of a... My father wasn't a country hick as Deeds was in the film, but there's a kind of honesty and integrity, and there's a way in which he just understood the suffering of people and wanted to find a way to write about that, and yet in a way that would be easy to digest.
Yeah, I think of a lot of those films he wrote, particularly the Capra films, the common people shine through as having a certain nobility. They're not looking down upon them. They're elevating.
No, they're really the heroes of the films. They're the people who have the basic integrity and the basic wisdom, sort of populist notions we have today. I think my father felt people were basically good. And if you sat down with him and you set aside all the conflicts and the tribalism that they experience and because of the political turmoil, even then as now, and you said, what do you really think? What is it really important? And it's basically the simple things, you know, kind of looking after your kids in a nice way and making sure you have enough food on the table, and it, as opposed to kind of the greed that really is what defeats us, all of these themes that I keep thinking about as I'm watching our political landscape, makes me sort of yearn for my father's simple philosophy. And this idea that if we just listen to each other and care about each other and help each other out a little bit, you know, be good to your neighbor sort of thing. It all seems very, maybe too simplistic. And yet, gosh, if we could live that way a little bit more, I think we would be happier.
Sounds like a good time for us to go back and revisit and learn from these films again. I appreciate the time you've given us. You've really done a marvelous job, I think, of capturing who your parents were as artists and human beings. And it's also an excellent biography of Hollywood as well. So I really appreciate you speaking with me today, Victoria Riskin.
Well, it's been my delight, and thank you so much.
My guest today has been Victoria Riskin, author of the new book, Fay Wray and Robert Riskin, a Hollywood memoir. Miss Riskin is the daughter of the actress Fay Wray and the screenwriter Robert Riskin, and she will be in El Paso this coming Tuesday and Wednesday for a book signing and to introduce screenings of the films King Kong, The Wedding March, and You Can't Take It With You at the Plaza Classic Film Festival. For information on showtimes and tickets, log on to plazaclassic.com. An extended version of my conversation with Victoria Riskin can be found at ktep.org. On Film's Engineer is Seth Van Meter. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.